phones came out. I think I was at the latter part of college up at Western, about 2001, and on the campus, my friends and I would see people with these devices up by their ears. And our first thoughts were, what idiots? What idiot? You think you're that important, you need to walk around with a cell phone. And you think you're so cool, right? And then by the end of college, all of a sudden, it came to be thinking, I think I need a cell phone. I am that cool. And so maybe like me, you got some sort of cell phone. It was probably the little block one, right, that was small, but it had the keys on the face of it. Do you remember when you transitioned, if you did, to the flip phone? And, you know, I feel a little bad. I think some of you right now are thinking, I have that in my pocket. Some of you might still have the flip phone, but here it is. Here's mine, Verizon One. You know, when I got this back, it was, I think it was 05, 06, got my flip phone. Did you think, like me, you were so awesome? I was like, I have the most cool phone in the world. You know, you ever find yourself in a public place being like, hello? Hold on, I'm not getting very good reception. Let me pull the antenna up. Yeah, it was so awesome. And I remember the flip phone, you know, it looked on it, it has the numbers and the letters together. So to send a text message took about 9 to 10 minutes. As you had to hit the function number, you know, function letter, go back and forth. These flip phones were so awesome. Well, I was at my house about a week or two ago, and I was digging around somewhere in some box in some closet, and I found my flip phone. And I thought, oh, man, it brought back all these memories. But you know what? Once I graduated from the flip phone and then moved to the iPhone, I think the iPhone 4 was the first one I got. That was a pretty dramatic leap going from this to an iPhone. And I got that, and I've progressed on to the future iPhones and all that. But the interesting thing was is I found this in a closet in the corner of our house in some random box. After it had done its use and it was no longer effective and purposeful, it was put away, it was put out to pasture, it was sent away. And I think some of us view being a retired in the same fashion. I think in a similar vein, when we talk about retirement, we have the same philosophy. Whether it be going through retirement of a person who is retired, it's time to put someone out to pasture. You know, we've been going through a series for about 4 or 5 weeks now, and we're talking about work. Our sermon series has been titled, Working 9 to 5, Our Work, God's Glory. And today we're going to talk about retirement. The title is Retirement, a Dirty Word. And we've been talking about all different things about work, God's design for work. Last week we talked about rest. And what I want to do today is obviously talk about retirement. But as I do, I want to clarify up front, this is not a cheap shot or an attack on retirement. My goal today is not to trash retirement. My goal today is to redeem retirement from a biblical perspective. My desire is to redeem retirement from the culture and what it thinks about retirement, and renew it with a biblical perspective. I wanted this too because I think a cultural view of retirement has not only crept into the church, but I think in my estimation has oftentimes completely saturated the church. It has incapacitated and deceived and weakened many Christians in their understanding of a retired life. And so that's what I want to talk about today. I recognize right off the very bat, I am not retired. I have a long ways to go to it. So some of you may be thinking, what right do you have to tell us about retirement? And you're right, in regards to experience, I don't. But hopefully, biblically, we can look at it from that perspective. So first off, what I want to do is talk about the history of retirement right off the bat, because it's so important because, again, I think we have the understanding maybe that retirement's been around for centuries when, in fact, it hasn't. Retirement is more of a modern concept. And so I'm going to just lay out some of the history of retirement. Well, first off, the basis for it, or the basis of this idea of reaching a certain point in life where you stop working, began a number of centuries ago, actually millennia ago, when soldiers in the Roman army, back at the turn of the century, even before the turn of the century, got pensions for serving in the army. Actually, in 13 BC, the Roman Emperor Augustus began paying pensions to Roman legionnaires who'd served more than 20 years in the army. And this pension that they received was not a pension that they were supposed to live on. It was just a small fraction to basically say a thank you for your service in the army. Well, fast forward a number of decades later to the Civil War, a similar practice was started as well in there. That in the Civil War, pensions were given to soldiers who were disabled or who were injured in war, oftentimes given to widows of soldiers who had died in war, these similar kind of pensions. And so you see this really in the army before anything else. Other thing about it too is that throughout the period of history prior to about the 1850s, that most people worked for two things. You either worked up until your death, or you worked until you were disabled and not able to work any longer. Those were essentially the two options. So that has been going on for century after century after century after century. I found out that in 1880, when half of Americans worked on a farm, 78% of American men worked past the age of 65. Almost 80% of men worked past the age of 65. And then what's interesting, as factories began to replace farms in economic importance, skeptics, and this is one of the things they began to say, was wondered in this transition from farming to machinery, if those who were older, past the age of 65, could begin to work with these new machines. And one of the ideas of retirement that began to be put into the mind of people was by the co-founder of John Hopkins Hospital, William Osler, who in 1905 decried the uselessness in regards to work of people older than 60 and said they should leave the workforce. Already it began, this idea that they, in regards to work, are useless and should be put out from the workforce. Well, the first official retirement system on a more global scale came in 1881. Otto von Bismarck, who was the minister president of Prussia, presented a radical idea, and I say radical on purpose, that the government and the government officials should provide financial support for those older members of the society. And I say radical because this kind of idea that we should provide for people financially in their old age was a completely foreign concept. For century after century after century, people worked until they died, or, like I said, or they were disabled. So to put this forward was a radical idea to provide this for people. But of course, in 1889, 8 years later, Prussia created the first retirement system for those that said 70 and older. Fast forward a little bit till 1935 here in the U.S. when the Social Security system was passed, which provided benefits for workers of 65 years of age and up. And I said before, this was a brand new phenomenon even here in the U.S. in 1935, that there should be this retirement system. But as decades rolled on and this retirement mindset and philosophy began to be ingrained into people, it began to be deeper and deeper put into the cultural consciousness, that there came this time in life when you stopped working, and it was at this age of 65. It moved, like I said, from decade to decade, from being this foreign radical concept to all of a sudden today, where I would say it is now unquestioned and has moved from not just unquestioning to I am entitled. I am entitled. So in a span of about 80 years, it has gone from completely radical and foreign to I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to a place in my life, and now it's a long period of life, where I should be financially provided for a long series of years and not have to work anymore. You know, I don't know if you have said some of these phrases, but when I was working for the city of Bellevue, it was so common to hear people, as people were getting to the age of retirement, to hear some of these kind of entitlement catchphrases that I would hear from people. You would hear people say things like, you certainly deserve it. And they would talk about getting around to it. You certainly deserve it. Some would say this is a long overdue rest, you would hear. Another one was, I've already put in my time. Anyone said that? I've already put in my time. And I think what that really reflects is this idea of entitlement. I have done X and I'm entitled to Y. The reason I want to bring this up is because I think this is so important when we think about culture and the church, is that oftentimes what we do as the church is we go along with these things that have been in culture for a long time and we don't question them. We just accept what the culture does and we go along with it. We adopt its practices, we adopt its beliefs, we adopt its values, and we assume that it's right for the Christian, and we don't step back and look at it critically and biblically and analyze it and say, is this what the Bible teaches? And if so, I should be doing it, of course, and if not, not. But I think retirement perhaps is one of the biggest things culturally where we as a church have bought into a cultural philosophy. And when it comes to this idea of entitlement, I don't want to be harsh, but I do want to say that God doesn't owe any of you or any of us retirement. You're not entitled to it. He doesn't owe you that. He doesn't owe you a long period in your life where you are free from work and able to relax. He's a loving Father. Yes, He is. He cares deeply about our lives. He's involved in our lives. He is there for us, but don't confuse that with a sense that God owes me a long and happy retirement. I know that's hard maybe to hear, but technically speaking, biblically speaking, you and I are not entitled to anything. Everything we have been given is a gift. It is a gift. I think sometimes some of the things you also hear about retirement is it's a time to forego commitments. It's a time to forego responsibilities. It's a time to forego obligations. And just to quote, enjoy life. It's a time to step back and focus on myself and live how I'd like to live. For all my working years, and maybe you've said this if you're retired, you know, I had to live under a boss. I had to live according to other people's demands and a schedule and all these obligations and responsibilities. And finally, I can focus on me. Finally, I focus on me. The catchphrase might be, I can do whatever I want, whenever I want. This was, I mentioned earlier before, another sermon, a woman at my work, as she was talking about retirement, she actually had the courage to even say this very thing. I asked her about her retirement, what she's going to be doing, and she said, oh, John, I'm so excited. I finally get to live for me. And I thought, wow, I can't believe she just said that. But she said probably what a lot of us are thinking, but not willing to say. It was a chance to finally live for me. You know, the other thing too about this is we don't just retire from our work, but I think we oftentimes retire spiritually and in ministry too. That we have in our minds, it's not just retiring from work, but it's a time for me, in a sense, to check out from God and check out from ministry. Spiritually speaking, I think that we want to find a nice, comfortable spot in our Christian lives where we're following God fairly well. It's not too risky on this hand, but it's not lazy over here. It's not passionate and sold out, but it's not nothing. It's not white-hot burning flames for Christ, but it's not freezing cold either. It's not overflowing in abundance, but it's not empty. It's just a nice place in the middle. What's interesting about this middle ground position that I think we sometimes find ourselves in and want is that Jesus encountered this same issue in Revelation when he went to a church there. And he had some pretty strong words to say when he had the seventh letter written to the church there. He said this, "These are the words of the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the ruler of God's creation." He says, "I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one or the other. So because you are lukewarm in the middle, neither hot or cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth." Jesus' words, not mine. I think we do, not just spiritually speaking, but we tend to want then to settle in ministry, right? Do you ever find yourself when you think about retirement, or maybe you are retired, that idea of it's time for me to check out of ministry. It's time for someone else. When we find ourselves saying this, it's time for someone else to take on all the hard tasks of ministry, and it's time for me to finally step back. And I'm not saying that there might be times to step back, and there might be times other people do kinds of things. I'm not saying it always looks the same. But the idea that it's time for me to check out of ministry is one of the things that comes along with it. Does this mean I'm saying that there needs to be 40 hours of work given to ministry? No, that's not what I'm saying. It'll look very different as we go through different seasons of life. But the reality is that those of you who are older have so many incredible skills and abilities and experiences and knowledge that you've gained over the years. And just to all of a sudden end all that and not deposit it into someone else can't be done. In fact, in the book of Titus, Paul talks about this. He tells Titus, he says this, he says, "You, however," Titus 2, 1 through 4, "you, however, must teach what is in accordance with sound doctrine." He says, "Teach the older men to be temperate, worthy of respect, self-controlled, and sound in faith, in love, and in endurance." Then he says, "Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. They then can train the younger women to love their husbands and children." Did you catch that? They can train. Paul lays out this idea, this concept of older men and older women, you're not done. You don't get to check out a ministry. Your job has changed. It's not gone. It's changed now to you invest in those younger. Older men, you take younger men, you walk alongside them. You mentor them, help them, train them, equip them. Older women, you do the same with a younger women. Paul is not giving any kind of idea of checking out. Okay, so what are some of the consequences, though, of this? What are some of the consequences of adopting a cultural mindset of retirement? And I want to walk through six of them. So here's the first. The first one is, I think, it encourages self-centeredness. It encourages self-centeredness. That the woman I talked about at my work that I mentioned a little bit earlier, it becomes all about me. That this philosophy of retirement, it becomes all about me, and I orient everything around me. I get to relax and have it easy, and then everything works according to my ideas and my timeline and my schedule and what I want. It becomes all about me. The second thing is this idea, it buries our treasures and talents in the ground. It buries our treasures and talents in the ground. After working 30 to 40 years of your sort of paid working life, there are incredible, like I said, skills, abilities, wisdom, experiences, knowledge that you've gained. And to all of a sudden just take that up, wrap it in a box, and bury it in the ground, I think is wrong to do that. It also, with this, if you notice, it sees work as a temporary thing that I did, and now I'm done with it, and I basically pack it up in a bag and then throw it out on the curb like it's trash. I wrap up all my working years, everything I did, now it's just over, it's gone. It's like kind of like you think about making a bunch of money, like, you know, if you've been working for a long time and you wisely handled your money and saved up a lot of money, it's like retiring and having $4 or $5 million and taking that and just burying it in the ground. Rather than thinking all the amazing things you could do with that money, all the wonderful ways you could bless people with it. It's the same way, not with money, but with all the things you have become to invest in other people. The third thing is, I think it can become, or it can result in a meaningless and monotonous life, is that when you retire like this, oftentimes you struggle with finding any sort of purpose outside of your work. And you find this so often with people who have worked for a long time and invested so deeply in the two big things of their work and family, and then all of a sudden when children are gone and a work career ends, so many people are left with this massive void saying, what purpose there is there in my life? What meaning is there left? The two things that were so important are gone. And so what you find sometimes, not oftentimes, is a lot of, some retired people I've talked to, is that their day is filled with going and getting gas, going and getting groceries, running to Home Depot, stopping by the mall, picking up dry cleaning, running by the post office, all these kind of small task things in the day that I think sometimes underneath are an effort to find meaning. Are an effort to give some sort of meaning to my life, that I'm part, that I'm contributing to something. And it can be a loss of meaning. Number four is with this idea, we glamorize and idolize retirement. We glamorize and we idolize it so that it makes it so that we see our working years as just grinding it out or getting through it. Do you guys ever find this? Again, working at the City of Bellevue, so many mornings I'd walk in on a Monday morning and I'd walk in the elevator with someone and I'd say, hey, how's it going? And they'd say, oh, pretty good. They said, yeah, but you know, we only got 4 days left. And I'm like, 4 days left? What do you mean? And like, well, 4 days left of the weekend. And I was like, wow, really? That's what you're focusing on? And even on a smaller venue, that'd be glamorizing and idealizing the weekend, right? So what does it make? Well, it makes my work week just something to get through. I've just got to manage it to get to the weekend. Well, in a larger scale, retirement becomes the same thing. I idolize it, so I just got to get through these working years to get to this wonderful time when I can finally live for myself, take it easy, relax, and not be responsible for anything, right? And so we idolize and glamorize retirement as this wonderful time that we can do all these things, and then we get there, and like I've talked about before, with every other idol in our life, when you finally get it, you look in your hands and say, look at this. It's dust, and it evaporates, and you realize you didn't get what you were hoping for, and it becomes nothing. The fifth one is work is only done to earn money. I think that's the thing, too, is with this idea of retirement, that it really cements this idea that work is only to earn money. And yes, all of us would be honest and say, of course, money is a big part of work. We need money to operate in this world, and work is the way to do that. But we talked about many messages about that God has so much more to do with our work than just making money. So it's not just 40 years and when I hit that X value in my bank account that I can now say, yep, I'm done. No more work for me. That we learn that the Bible is teaching us that God didn't design it for that. God worked and God didn't need money. And God did it so he could create, he could build, he could develop. That he knew work was good in and of itself, not because it earns money. And I think here that God has graciously given all of us a certain amount of time on this planet and our responsibility to use that time as best we can. So if you've gotten to a point in life where you don't need to work for finances, you don't need the money anymore, what wonderful opportunities you have then. You don't have to be constrained for financial reasons anymore. You have so many opportunities to bless so many people with not being restricted to money. Maybe it's volunteering, maybe it's working at a school, maybe it's being a prayer warrior for our church or people, maybe it's mentoring a group, maybe it's all the things that you were loving and hoping to do, but you had to work for a certain time for money. And the last thing is this, it assumes those who are older have the least to offer our world. This idea, like I said before with the flip phone, that when it's all done, it gets put out to pasture. And I think this idea of retirement is that your best years are your younger and middle years, and your older years are, you're just off over here. When the reality is God, and we'll talk about this in a couple of minutes here, some examples in the Bible of their best years, some of these people in the Bible, were their latter years, were the best years of their whole entire life. As we transition, I want to transition here, though, from looking at the consequences and this kind of cultural view of work to more of a biblical understanding of work, how God defines it. Before we do that, I just want to clarify a couple of things because I don't want you to be misled about what I'm saying, and I want you to understand what I'm saying and what I'm not saying. So the first one is this, is the Bible is not opposed to aging. The Bible is not opposed to reality of aging. And of course, aging as a result of the fall, and then our bodies continually, as we grow older, kind of begin to slow down, and they age, and that's just reality. The Bible is not opposed, like I said, to slowing down. It's no surprise that as we age, and I'm even noticing this in my life, even though I'm still in my late 30s, that things do start slowing down. And we went and visited my folks this weekend in Spokane. And my parents are in their early 70s, and my wife and I have commented in the last 5-10 years, you can see us slowing down. You can see energy levels are not the same, and things start slowing down. The Bible's not opposed to that, and the Bible recognizes that, and the Bible wants us to make accommodations for that. The Bible also is not opposed to being a limited in our bodies. The reality is, too, is some of us, when we get to retirement age, have visions and callings and passions for things, but physically we can't do it. Whether it be we have an injury or we have a sickness or we have whatever it might be, we're physically limited. And for some of us here today, we're saying, gosh, I would love to do so many awesome things that I feel God even wants me to do, but I just can't. I just can't. I physically have restrictions for it. And God understands. God knows that, and he sees that. Also, too, the Bible isn't opposed to enjoying saving up for things in life, delayed gratification. In fact, I would say the Bible teaches that concept, The idea that we are to sacrifice things in life to enjoy them later. Everything from the Bible teaching us about having self-control, right? And it being one of the fruits of the Spirit, to living a life of discipline, the Bible teaches us. To when it comes to sexually, to save ourselves for marriage or to sacrifice younger in life so I can enjoy that wonderful gift of marriage. And last then, financially sacrificing so that later in life I can have the finances so I can enjoy things. And so I want to make it clear to you, the Bible is not opposed to that. The Bible is not opposed to being smart in your years where you're earning money so that later in life you have enough money where you can go take some fun trips. You can go do some really cool thing, go to some things you never could before. The Bible, I would say, is for that, not against that. And then last, like I said, the Bible is not opposed to non-work things. I don't want to convey the message that it's all about work. In fact, last week we talked about rest and the importance of rest and the importance of leisure and just stopping and enjoying life and the beautiful things it has to offer. The Bible is for that. It is not against it. Sometimes I think that might be a wonderful time to enjoy, you know, a time with your spouse and friends and family to go travel and do some wonderful, fun things. And the Bible is for that. So how do we view retirement biblically? Laying out some of those things I wanted to clarify, how do we look at biblically? Well, what's interesting is the first thing is there's actually one verse in the Bible that does talk about retirement. And if you've been someone who's searched through the scriptures before, I know many people have searched through and said, I've got to find a verse in here that's about retirement. That, you know, there's got to be a time in life where we stop working. There's got to be that. Well, yes, there is one verse, but we'll talk about that. So the verse is Numbers 8, 24 through 26. And the verse says this. It says, the Lord said to Moses, this applies to the Levites. Men 25 years old or more shall come to take part in the work at the tent of meeting, but at the age of 50, they must retire from their regular service and work no longer. There it is! 50, we're all done! We're all done! It says, but here it says, they must assist their brothers in performing their duties at the tent of meeting, but they themselves must not do the work. This then is how you are to assign the responsibilities of the Levites. You know, before you say to yourself, I knew it was in the Bible. It has got to be there. We need to observe a couple things about this passage, okay? Okay, first off is that as I just said, this is the only verse in the Bible that talks about retirement. That alone should say a lot, that there's only one verse that speaks about this. You know, sometimes the problem that we do or the mistake we make is we build a perspective, or we build a worldview, or we build a theology on one verse. Have we done that right? We sometimes do that. Huge mistake to build a theology or a lifestyle or something I should live off of one verse. Why? Because the Bible is a whole book. The Bible's not a verse. And when you read one verse, you have to take the consistent theme of Scripture as a whole to look at that. You look at the context of the passage, then you look at the Bible as a whole. And so I just think one of the dangers is to hear this verse and say, yep, obviously it's clear, we should all retire. That's not the case. That is one verse. The second one is this verse, if you notice, was given to the Levitical priesthood. So this verse, to be careful again, was not given to the general public. This was not given to all Israelites. It was not given to families. It was not given to anyone else except the Levitical priesthood. This was given to priests. The third thing is, it was given to priests who were performing at the tabernacle. This was specifically related to their work at the temple and the tabernacle. This was not discussed in their other responsibilities. So this is one very specific thing. And the last is a comment by a commentator, Adam Clark, on this passage in the book of Numbers. He says this. He says, in regards to the men who were retired, it says they were no longer obligated to perform any laborious service, meaning all the physical stuff. And, you know, if you read in the Old Testament the work of the priest, it was very physically demanding. With all the sacrifices that you were doing, you were going in and moving things around all the time, carrying different objects around. It was a very physically demanding job. And so what he's saying is they were no longer obligated to do all that kind of service, but were to act as general directors and counselors. This helped the younger men assume more responsibilities and allowed the older men to be in a position to advise and counsel them. In other words, It wasn't an opportunity when you were 50 to go to Maui and go to the golf course. It was an opportunity when you turned 50 to now go back to the younger men and just change your work. You no longer doing physically work. You were maybe doing some coaching. You were doing some mentoring. You were teaching them about management. You were maybe teaching them about leadership. You were teaching them spiritually about what they were doing. It's just that your job changed. That's what it was. And the last thing is this about this, is there's no other directive in Scripture given about a time in life where you stop working, besides that of one verse. And so I just think it's important to see that verse and to hear that verse, but to understand the context and what it's really teaching. The second thing, I think, biblically, is that we start with God. We start with God as we've done. Every single time we talked about work, we always bring it back to God, right? And so we talked about in Genesis 2, 1 through 3, this passage we've kind of used over and over again, where it says, after creating, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. It's important to remember that this is before the fall. This is before the fall. And it's important to notice too, you notice with God, there's a rhythm, right? There's this rhythm. It's work and then rest. And then he says the very same thing in Exodus 28 through 11 in the Ten Commandments. When he says to the Israelites, he says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days, he ties it to God, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. What you see from God from the very beginning is this detailed rhythm of work, rest, work, rest, work, rest. The problem with the cultural view of retirement is it breaks that rhythm and it's just rest, 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 rest. But God at the very beginning designed it to be a life of I work, I rest, I work, I rest, I work, I rest. Now granted, does it always look the same? No. So throughout life, there's different periods of work and there's different times of rest. And as you get to retirement, those places or those seasons are probably longer drawn out. But there still is times of work and rest. And the work looks very different. It may not be what you were doing during your paid working years, but there still is that rhythm that we can't lose. Work, rest, work, rest, work, rest. The third one is pay it forward, is to pay it forward. As you saw a little bit earlier when I was talking about that verse in Titus, when Paul taught him and said, older men should be doing this and older women doing the same thing. It was this idea of paying it forward. This idea that after I've done my years and I've learned all these things in my working years and I've gained all these skills and abilities, it's now time for me to turn back to the younger generation and to deposit them to them. It's not a time just to take those, like I said, and bury them in the ground. It's a time to pay it forward. The fourth one is, I want to look at, is some of the biblical character examples of this. Who are people in the Bible that have modeled this? And there's actually a number of them, but I want to list just four of them. The first one's Moses. Moses, a pretty famous one. Did you know that when God came to Moses to tell him to go into Egypt to rescue the Israelites, Moses was 80 years old. Yeah, Moses wasn't 22. Moses was 80 years old. And then the bulk, actually almost all of his work of taking the Israelites out of Egypt and bringing them into the promised land, all that work was between 80 and 120 when he died. So the vast majority of what we read about Moses in the Bible took place in the last part of his life. 80 to 120 is when he had the most ministry of any time. The second one is Daniel. You know what's really fascinating about Daniel is when you look at the life of Daniel, and when we talk about Daniel in the lion's den, almost every picture you see of Daniel, and honestly, when we tell the story, is Daniel's this young man falling into the lion's pit. Did you know when you look at the timeline of the book of Daniel, that when he was put in the lion's pit, he was actually around 80 years old? He was around 80 years old when he fell into the lion's pit, which means he was functioning in the government work he was doing. He was in government. His 60s, 70s, and 80s was fully functioning in his government work. He was leading, helping to lead a nation in his 70s and 80s. The Apostle John in the New Testament. The Apostle John was over 90 years old when he was on the island of Patmos writing his two books. And when he wrote the book of Revelation, he was 92 years old. He was 92 when he wrote that. And you think about it, did that take 2 days to write? No, that probably took a couple years to write. So here a guy is in his early 90s writing and preaching. It's amazing. And the last, of course, is Paul. Paul, we see, from everything we can tell in church history, he died when he was in about his early to mid-60s. So what was Paul doing in his early and mid-60s? Well, we see he was doing everything from preaching. He was planting churches. He was writing huge letters to churches. He was developing leaders. He was teaching, and he was sharing his faith all over the world, right? He was doing all of it, and he even ends his life by saying in 2 Timothy 4:7, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And there's many, many other examples that we can give in the Bible of these people who never got to a place where they stopped, where they said, I'm done. I'm done with Jesus. I'm done with ministry. I'm done with any work. I'm done. They went all the way. One author was talking about retirement, and he said maybe another way to view retirement is rather than retirement is retooling. Rather than retreating is to retooling what you have, is looking what you've gained in life, looking the experiences, the abilities, and all God's done, and now how can you retool that for something different? And yes, it may not look the same, but it's using what you've gained. I want to end today by asking, as I was looking at these biblical examples, I kept asking myself, what would motivate these people to do this? What would motivate these four characters to be so sold out to Jesus to the very end? And I think to do that, we need to look at the life of Bill Bright. Some of you might know Bill Bright and recognize his name. Bill Bright was a man who was born around 1920. And he was born over on the East Coast, and as he got into his mid-20s, he decided to move over to the West Coast, down to Los Angeles. And he was there, and this was in the early 1950s, and he was a confectioner. He did a confectioner's business, was a very smart, intelligent guy, and so he had this growing, thriving confectioner's business down in Southern California. Well, Bill was a Christian. And as he began to sort of ask God about his future and what he should be doing and all that, he really began to be gripped and burdened by Jesus' command in Matthew 28 to go make disciples of all nations. And Bill Bright was so convicted by that and thought, you know what? What do I need to do? And so he felt called by God that he needed to leave his confectionery's business and he needed to go do something different. So he went to Southern California onto a college campus and began Campus Crusade for Christ, which most of us have probably heard of by now, which became one of the biggest international ministries in the entire world. At one point in time, Campus Crusade for Christ, which is called CRU now, had 26,000 staff members and 225,000 volunteers. Massive. Bill Bright, some of the things that he did during this time, he came up with the Four Spiritual Laws book, which I think a lot of us have probably heard of back in the late 50s. The Four Spiritual Laws book went on to sell close to 1.2 billion copies. 1.2 billion copies it sold. In the late 70s, he went to produce the Jesus film. Many of us have heard the Jesus film or seen it. The Jesus film went on to be seen by more than 5.1 billion people in 225 countries and is the most widely viewed as well as the most widely translated film in history is the Jesus film. In the latter part of his life, in the 80s and 90s, when he was in his 60s and 70s, he went on to author over 100 books and thousands of articles that he wrote while being involved in Campus Crusade for Christ. Did he do the same things he did back in the 50s? No, it looked different, but he still was involved in it. And in 2003, Bill Bright breathed his last breath and died at the age of 82 years old, still actively involved in Campus Crusade for Christ, up till the very end. And I thought, you know, what motivated this guy's life? What motivated it? And like the four other people too, I think it was this absolute gripping, absolute conviction that there were people who hadn't heard about Jesus. There were people who hadn't heard about the gospel. And these men and these women, I think, had tasted Jesus and experienced Jesus and thought, how can I go on living? How could I check out of life? How could I check out of work? How could I check out of ministry when these people haven't tasted Jesus? How could I do that? And that just gripped them. And they lived for life for that, and they were not willing to stop. I think they knew that God is never done with your life. God is never done with your life. Let us all say at the end of our lives the words that Paul said, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, I am so convicted by the fact that the people we looked at in the Bible, Lord, and you yourself knew that your life was in the Father's hands. Our lives are in your hands. And like we saw in that missionary video, I love the fact of that woman who said that no matter with her life or her death, that her life was in your hands. And if there is a task to be done, she was going to do it with everything she had until you called her home. Lord, let that be our cry. Let us hear today, God. I know some of us are either right on the verge of retirement. Some of us are in our retirement years. And God, I pray for the person who's here today and says, you know what? That is me. I have checked out. I have bought hook, line, and sinker into what the culture believes. And I have completely checked out. I'm doing my own thing. I haven't given a lot of thought to how I could use my life for your glory. God, today I pray, would you whisper back into that person's heart? Would you begin to kindle that flame that's inside them, that flame that maybe they once knew or they once had for you and for ministry and others? Would you begin to kindle that back up so that they have this passion, they have this flame that burns bright for you? And God, for the person who's younger, who's a long way away from retirement, Lord, would you help them to begin thinking about it and planning for it and how they might use those years in the latter part of their life to glorify you? And they may even now begin to put into place the things that they can do to prepare for that and to plan for that. God, you are never done with our lives. Let us be people who are going for you, fighting for you, praying for you, ministering for you, sharing the gospel for you, Lord, until our very last breath. Thank you, Jesus, in your great name. Amen. Let's continue singing.